daily Los Angeles Angels podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Angels, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. You're locked in with your host, Brent McGuire. In today's episode, we're going to do a fan mailbag segment and go over the spring training game from Thursday and dive into all of your Angels-related questions. Before doing so, as usual, if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can find me at bmags94, my written work at Crashing the Pearly Gates, and if you haven't done so already, make sure to download, subscribe, rate, and review the Locked On Angels podcast wherever you get your podcast from. So happy Friday and happy Shohei Ohtani Day. This is being released a couple of hours before Ohtani is making his first start on the mound this spring. And obviously that is a very, very exciting proposition and must-watch TV for Angels fans. We have lots to get into today. As I mentioned at the top, we're going to do a fan mailbag that's essentially going to take up the entirety of this episode. I did want to briefly go over Thursday's game that the Angels played in Scottsdale against the Arizona Diamondbacks, and some of the players we'll touch on in these fan mailbag questions, so I won't spoil some of those quite yet, but I did want to go over some of the performances, and luckily, this game was at Salt River Fields at Talking Stick, which is one of the few spring training facilities that actually has the StatCast data available to the public. So this was kind of a must-watch game just from that perspective, because you can get more accurate velocity readings and exit velocities and all of that kind of stuff. So I think the obvious starting point to talk about is Griffin Canning's performance on the mound, and maybe it was a little bit of a mixed bag in terms of results. There were a lot of strikeouts, a lot of hard contact, but for me, the most important thing to see from him was the velocity, and we saw improvements on every single pitch compared to last year. His fastball velocity was about a half a mile per hour quicker. We saw Canning use five different pitches, and this is a little bit different compared to where he was the last couple of seasons. If you'll remember correctly, when he first came up in 2019, he had kind of a slower curveball than he showed last year. Last year's curveball was basically a very, very hard slider, and he talked to Fabian Ardiaz a couple weeks ago about kind of some new pitch classifications, and we saw that on display. We saw the slower curveball, we saw the slower slider, or he was kind of calling it a cutter, the changeup, and then the slider. So he had five pitches going. They all came in different velocities and, quite frankly, looked really good. This is a very encouraging start for a guy who's going to play a pivotal role for the Angels. And I don't think it's that outlandish to say that if Griffin Canning is healthy this season, he's a real opportunity to be the best Angels starting pitcher. Now, maybe that says more about the Angels rotation as a whole than Canning's talents, but I'm really buying how good this guy is. He's already been a league average or slightly above league average starting pitcher, both in terms of run prevention and his underlying numbers, the strikeouts, the walks, the ability to limit hard contact. All of those things are trending in the right direction for this guy. And again, he's not going to turn 25 years old until the middle of the season. He's already proven he's a major league caliber starting pitcher. If this guy can stay healthy, I think there are a lot of good things that are on the way for him. In terms of the rest of the game, there were a lot of the reserves that were playing in this Angels game. There was something floated by Jeff Fletcher of the Orange County Register. He thinks that the Angels are going to roll out all of their starters on Friday's game, so that was why we really didn't see anybody other than Jared Walsh as a projected starter playing in Thursday's game. There was one performance that was definitely important to point out, and that was Brandon Marsh, who had a triple, showed off his ability to make hard contact. He hit this ball 98 miles per hour. We saw the speed on display when he was able to make it to third base, so this was very exciting. It's a good look at one of the younger, brighter prospects for the Angels, and he's fun to watch. I'm really excited to see his development this year. There's just a lot to like in the skill set. There's a lot to like just from like an aesthetic point of view. He's athletic. He's strong. He kind of does everything pretty well. He's got the big beard going and the long hair, all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of a fun profile, and I'm very, very much excited to follow what he does this year. But I think that's all I've got from the game. So I want to dive into some of these questions from the fans. So once again, thank you to whoever wanted to send questions. And I'm going to try to break these up into different categories and kind of touch on each of them individually. And our first question is from Angels Over the Pond, our good friends over in the UK and Ireland. If you're not following them already, make sure to go check them out. It's great to see this kind of fan support globally and not just within the United States. So I hope you guys are doing well. Their question is, do you see Adele coming back to the majors from the minors during this season? So I wanted to hold off on the Adele banter because I knew this question was kind of lining up in the queue, and it's been a rough go for Joe Adele over the last year or so. Around this time last year, this guy was a consensus top five prospect. The expectations were kind of through the roof at that point, and there was this expectation right before COVID hit that Adele was going to go to AAA, he was going to get his seasoning in, and come up at some point, maybe during the season, and be that, you know, borderline or total superstar that the Angels were kind of expecting him to be. Obviously, things have kind of gone in a negative direction in every way possible for Adele in that time frame. You had COVID that took away the minor league season that forced Adele to come up to the major leagues when, quite frankly, he probably was not ready. But regardless, we saw him in the majors struggle his way through a handful of months, and it kind of raised some warning flags about some of the flaws within his game. And that's not to say that he's still an insanely talented player, and I'm still fully buying in on him as becoming a really good major leaguer, but we did see the swing and miss in his game. We saw the defensive issues. Those were both things that scouts had talked about in the past that might have held him back, and we kind of saw it in full display. And early on this spring, we're seeing some of the same things. And again, I don't want to go against what I said yesterday about taking into account what these spring training stats and games mean. This is a time where players are trying to get used to getting back into the grind and working through their issues, and I fully acknowledge that. But I will say, seeing Joe Adele struggle in the field already, seeing the swing and miss in his game, it's still a cause for concern. It's very obvious that this is something that he's going to have to work through. And luckily for the Angels, they do have the minor league season this year. They can send him to Salt Lake, let him get his reps in, work through all of these issues that he has right now, and then call him up when he's ready. Like I said, I'm still fully buying in on this guy's potential. We've seen the power that he has. We've seen the speed that he has. I still think he's going to be okay defensively. Maybe that comes in left field rather than right field to kind of cover up some of the flaws. I still buy the power. As a whole, I'm still buying the skill set. He has done so much positive to this date. The tools are there. The prospect pedigree's there. The numbers were there in the minor leagues. I really do think this is a matter of time of just letting him get some reps in the minor leagues. Let him go to Salt Lake, work through these issues, and come up. Yes, there are some very obvious concerns to have, and I'm definitely more concerned than I was about a year ago because we did see those swing and miss issues in the major leagues, and if he's not able to make contact with the ball consistently, it doesn't really matter how much power he has. And the defensive issues, yeah, I was not expecting him to look this bad out in right field, so I'm hoping it's still due to the fact that he's learning a new position and trying to work through things. Again, this guy did not have a minor league season last year. I'm trying to take that into account. And again, just like I said about Brandon Marsh, I'm very, very excited to see the development of Adele this year. I think it's going to be good for him to get some time in Salt Lake, work through his issues, and I would not at all be surprised if both of those guys are up in the majors at some point this season. We're going to move on to our next question from Brad asking about my thoughts on the signing of catcher Edgar Cuero. And for those not familiar, Edgar Cuero signed with the Angels last week for $200 bonus. And this is from Francis Romero on Twitter, said that Cuero was the all-star catcher in the last World Cup U15. He's a switch hitter with great contact and defense. He left Cuba in 2019. So I will say I don't have much else to say about this signing. I can't find much else about him at the moment. We have seen some video courtesy of Taylor Blake Ward and Jared Timms on Twitter. A couple of swings of him in live games. And the swing looks good. It's always hard to tell because this guy's 15 years old. And quite frankly, so many of these guys are impossible to peg down because of their age. So I don't know if I have much else to add from this perspective. I will say that catching prospects in general, especially guys that are 15 years old, are have very high flameout rates. So always tough to tell with guys this young, but I will definitely be keeping an eye on him over the next couple years, especially once he starts making his way to affiliated baseball. Coming up here in a little bit, we're going to answer some more fan mail questions. But first, let me tell you about Bet Online. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. You can get real-time, updated odds and props on almost anything that you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for the news, scores, and odds that you need. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. If you go to betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get 50% off of your welcome bonus with your first deposit. Again, that's betonline.ag with the code LOCKEDON. We're covering everything that you need to know about the Angels, but what about the rest of sports? Now, the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well with Locked On Today. It's hosted by the great Peter Bukowski, and it's all the sports news you need every morning in under 20 minutes. So subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get your podcast from. Okay, so we've got a handful of questions to go through, so here we go. Our next question is from Ryan Pierce asking, could the Angels be saving that remaining $16.8 million per Fangraphs before the first luxury tax on a pitcher that they can trade for at the trade deadline if they're trying to make a playoff push? He says the frontline starting pitcher Angels fans want isn't available now and could be less expensive come July. This is definitely a possibility. From the outside looking in, I have really gotten the impression that the Angels want to see what happens with the current roster for this year, and I think that's why the offseason was a little underwhelming. I really do think they wanted to see where things are at this season, have some of their younger guys develop, get the Albert Pujols contract off their books next year, and kind of go from there. But if the Angels are in it come July, I would not at all be surprised to see them make a push for a starting pitcher of that caliber, whether that's someone like Sonny Gray or Luis Castillo or Germán Márquez, all guys that we've talked about on this podcast before. So I definitely think that's a possibility. The fact that they're still under that luxury tax by a pretty good amount means that they actually have that flexibility to go make a move in July. Now, on the flip side, there's also the scenario where the Angels are where they've been at for the past 5 years, and they have a bunch of guys on one-year deals. They could decide to go on a mass sell-off this July, and that's not talking about trading Mike Trout, Anthony Rendon, David Fletcher, Shohei Ohtani, but with all the impending free agents after this season, it's really going to depend on what the Angels are doing through the halfway point, and that will kind of gauge what direction they're going to go in. Our next question is from Most Unclutched Team. Is there any value on Matt Theis, and what do you think the plans are for him going into the future? I don't think Matt Theis is going to end up being that productive of a major leaguer. It's just a very underwhelming profile. I think a lot of his value coming out of college depended on his ability to make a lot of contact, to hit for a high average, to maybe play passable defense at first base. Everything that I have seen from him at the major league level, the numbers in the upper minors, has just really been underwhelming. It's hard to get by when you're playing a majority of your games at first base and don't hit for power, strike out too much, and don't hit for, you know, a high average, get on base, all that kind of stuff. As far as his value, it's hard to tell. I don't know. He's very clearly been leapfrogged at first base in the organization by Jared Walsh. That much is clear. But in terms of his actual value, what he might have moving forward, at this point, he looks like he's more AAA depth. Things could change. He does have that college pedigree, the prospect pedigree. But as far as I'm concerned, based on what I have seen, I'm just not expecting that much from him. Our next question is from Brian asking, who will be the most unexpected player to make the opening day roster? So for those that listened to the crossover episode a couple days ago with Jason Burke of Locked On Athletics, he kind of asked me about some of the position battles and some of the maybe the surprises that could make this roster. And quite frankly, you look at this Angels roster as it currently stands, and I think it's pretty straightforward. So I don't think there are a lot of avenues where someone's going to make the roster where it's going to be some gigantic surprise. I don't see that happening, but you can always look to the bullpen. I don't think there's a single team in all of baseball that has their bullpen completely locked down right now. There are always going to be a handful of guys battling it out for those last spots. So that's kind of where I'm going to turn. There are a lot of options. I think there are roughly 8 to 12 options that could potentially make the bullpen in those last few spots. I'm going to go with Junior Guerra, who just showed up to spring training. He had some visa issues, but this guy's been in the major leagues for the last half decade or so. He's shown success as a starter, most recently as a reliever, and I believe it was Jeff Fletcher of the Orange County Register pointed out that Joe Maddon has talked about Guerra a couple of times, and while he wasn't signed to a major league deal, he does have that recent major league experience and major league success that kind of makes him an option. And based on what I've seen, I actually haven't seen that many people talking about him being a surefire option. But over the last couple of days or so, I've kind of looked at the options and what might actually happen for the back end of that bullpen. And I think Guerra's a pretty good bet to make this team. You look at what he did last year in 2020, small sample, had a 3.04 ERA and a little fewer than 25 innings. His walk rate was not good at all. It was very, very high. But just kind of going back the last couple of seasons, he's thrown a lot of big league innings as a multi-inning reliever since 2019. We're talking about over 100 innings in that span, and that's obviously taking into account the fact that last year's season was a shortened one. So that's going to be my guy. I don't know if it's necessarily a surprise considering his recent track record, but I think that's the only real guy that I can think of at the moment. So moving on to the next question from Colin All Halos, who do you think is the most underrated free agent signing or traded player that Perry Minassian brought in this offseason? So this one's a little ironic, but I'm going to go with Jose Quintana, who at the time of that signing, I was very underwhelmed because I felt like this was not the best starting pitching acquisition they could possibly make this offseason. And as it turned out, he actually was the highest profile guy that they added. But as the offseason has gone on, and as we've kind of figured out what the Angels were going to do after that, it was pretty clear that Quintana was going to be one of their bigger additions that they made. So looking at why I think he's kind of an underrated addition to this team really has to do with the fact that he provides two things for the Angels. He provides quantity of innings and quality. Now, he's not going to pitch the way he did about a half decade ago when he was with the White Sox, where he was legitimately one of the best starting pitchers in the entire sport. He is not that guy anymore. He's moved into his 30s. The stuff is not quite as good. We've seen basically all of his numbers go in the wrong direction. But even when he was last healthy pitching a full season in 2019, he was basically a league average starter in a lot of innings. And that's something that's going to be very, very important for the Angels. And it's funny because I'm not concerned about his injury concerns. I mean, last year's injuries were very, very fluky. We're talking about the guy cutting his thumb while washing the dishes and then having a oblique injury. These are not arm-related injuries that I'm worried about. What I am worried about is the fact that he barely pitched last year and is now trying to ramp himself back up to pitching a full season. And the weird thing is we don't really know what the repercussions of the shortened 2020 season is going to do to a lot of pitchers. I think we're under the impression that it's going to be bad for pitchers trying to go from fewer innings to more innings, but It might be the opposite for some guys. It could be the inverse, where having that time off kind of in the middle of your career actually did a good thing and gave your arm the rest that it needed. So I'm going to be fascinated to see how really a lot of pitchers operate this season. But for a guy like Quintana, who showed this really insane durability basically for all of his career, had a full season off by all intents and purposes last year, and is now trying to come back and, you know, pitch 150 plus innings or so, I'm definitely fascinated to see what he does, because if he gets back to his 2019 level for the Angels and the Angels are competitive, we're talking about a real valuable starting pitcher for the Angels this season. And we're going to finish this off with a question from Jacob Firmage. And when I got this question, I felt like it was a very appropriate one to end this episode on. And he's asking, how does Perry Minassian handle his success? All of the upcoming free agents, let's just pretend that he hits quite well with the acquisitions and this team makes a serious run. Many of the aging vets are coming off the books next offseason. Is his game plan next offseason to re-sign guys or build a new team mostly? So there's a lot to unpack with this question, and I do want to start it off by just talking about the fact that it is a weird situation for new GM Perry Minassian to be in, just because he's taking over a roster that has quite clearly underperformed based on their expectations over the last half decade or so. And it's very appropriate for a new GM to come into a situation and say, okay, we're going to see what happens this year. We're going to evaluate, you know, partway through the season. It makes sense that a new GM might want to see what happens with the roster. But I think it goes without saying that this Angels roster is unique in so many different ways. They have Mike Trout. They have Anthony Rendon. They've got, you know, Shohei Ohtani, David Fletcher. They have very, very good players on this team. And because of the urgency to try to win and to make the most of this Trout and Rendon window, it is a little bit of a different approach. But based on what I have seen, again, from the outside looking in, I get the impression that the Angels really are trying to just get by this year to stay competitive and then go for it, you know, next offseason. And while I understand the sentiment to some degree, I'm still very underwhelmed by the idea that they're not going to, you know, push a little bit harder this season to make the most of the players that they do have. Yes, I sound like a broken record. I'm beating a dead horse at this point. But Mike Trout and Anthony Rendon are in their primes right now. And it's a very big risk to assume that that's going to be the case next year as well. Do I think they're going to be bad? No. Do I think they're going to decline like your average player? Absolutely not. These are two of the best players in baseball. In Mike Trout's case, the best player. But that being said, I do think there's something to be said for trying to make the most of these guys. So I got a little off topic from what Jacob was talking about, but it's just something that I have thought a lot about in regards to how the Angels are approaching this season. But if the Angels perform well this season with a lot of these guys, that's obviously great. That's fantastic news. If the Angels make the playoffs, it means a lot of things went right. And that could be due to the guys they brought in. It could be due to the fact that some of their younger players took a step forward. It could be some combination of both. I don't know what's going to happen next offseason because there is so much uncertainty surrounding not just the Angels, but the entire sport. Because of that CBA expiration next offseason, it's so hard to try to project what's going to happen a year from now. But let's try to play this activity like Jacob was drawing up just for fun. So let's assume that things go well for the Angels this year. They make the playoffs. They win, I don't know, 88 to 92 games or something. They win a wild card spot. They win the division. That probably means that some of the guys that they brought in did quite well. But it's a weird situation next offseason because four of the starting pitchers are hitting free agency. You've got a lot of relievers hitting free agency. Kurt Suzuki hitting free agency. Jose Iglesias hitting free agency. Albert Pujols, the contract is up. There are so many different things that are going to happen in the next year or so. It's going to be a very complicated season for the Angels where the range of outcomes is just through the roof for this organization. There are so many different things that could happen in the next year. Like in a best case scenario, you get contributions from all these guys they brought in, the young players, you know, Brandon Marsh, Joe Adell come up and they perform. You're going into next offseason looking quite well. But if things proceed like they have for the past 5 years, if the guys that they brought in don't perform, maybe the youngsters in AAA aren't performing the way you wanted them to, you might be going into next offseason with, you know, uncertainty around what's going to happen in the future. So it's a very, very difficult question to analyze. And again, I'm spending so much time on this because it's actually something I've thought quite a bit about, and it makes this season so compelling for the Angels. And quite frankly, it's a very important season because of the reasons that we just talked about. So to answer your question, Jacob, at this point, I really don't know what's going to happen because there are so many different things that could happen in this season. That's going to do it for today's episode of Locked On Angels. A big thank you to everybody who sent in questions. As usual, it's always fun to see that kind of feedback and these really engaging questions being sent in. So that wraps up this week. Again, for those that are listening before the Angels game at noon today, there's a good chance that we're going to see a fully engaged Angels lineup playing behind Shohei Ohtani on the mound, which is very exciting for a lot of reasons. So we'll definitely talk about that more on Monday's episode. As usual, at the end of the episode, I want to have a recommended reading for you. Fabi Nardaya had an article, kind of a profile on prospect Chris Rodriguez, and very good, engaging stuff. Kind of a feel-good story of sorts because, again, it's worth reminding you that Chris Rodriguez barely pitched over the last 3 or 4 seasons because of a lot of injuries. And Fabian talks to Rodriguez about not just the physical toll it took on him, but also the mental toll. And it's really just a compelling story and makes you want to root for this guy even more. So I will link that in the podcast description. But in the meantime, that's going to do it for today. As always, thank you for joining. Stay safe out there. Have a great weekend, and we will talk some Angels baseball on Monday.